There were three names filled in, one as a reserve, and I was second reserve, and I thought, oh, I'll put my name down, you know, I'm fairly safe there, aren't I? And I gradually moved up and up and up. So I got the call. What I like to do is share. And my first thought was, I want to do the best ever, most inspiration, perfect share anybody's ever heard. That was my first thought.
I'm doing that.
There you go. She's picked that up for me. My second thought was, what on earth do you think you're doing? Thinking you can get up there and speak to these people. You were a fraud, you're an imposter, you haven't got any recovery. For goodness sake, get a grip on yourself, woman. My third thought was, hang on a minute. I've got a program now. I've got a procedure. I've got some steps. I've got some tools. I must use them. So, pause, pray, play. I did that. I only need to share my experience, any strength I have, and my hope. It doesn't have to be like yours. That's all I can share. Fourth thought. I only thought of OA as my third thought. So I've got a way to go, yes, haven't I? I've got colour-coded paper so I can see how far I've got through what I'm sharing. I've been asked to share my abstinence. And when I came to OA, I can do this one-handed, that was what I thought my recovery would be like. I don't know whether you can see it. Some of you will recognise this. I thought, right, start at the bottom. Nice straight journey, fixed.
Sorted.
What did I get?
Yay!
There you go. There you go. And I've still got that all these years later. I'm very grateful for having that, though, because it's taught me a lot. You know, I've learning from mistakes and tripping up and going back and looking over things again. I'm looking at my abstinence on three levels. Physical. My physical abstinence, my baseline, is three meals a day, possibly one snack, one day at a time. Three moderate, considered, nutritious meals. I do use calories to guide me. I found that worked in the early stages. It helps me with portions and proportions. I try to have three roughly equal meals because that stops me from grazing all day. Or the alternative, which I used to do, which was to eat nothing all day and eat, you know, a day and a half, 2 days worth of food in the evenings. I've had to notice that textures of food are important for me. Maybe not the, you know, ingredients, but textures are important. My emotional abstinence is very much a work in progress, and I think it probably always will be. I think I came across this phrase, I don't have particularly food problems, but I do have problems with life. Life problems, living life. And my third sponsor said to me, why don't you try changing the words should and ought into could? And that helps me with my emotional abstinence because I don't feel an awful pressure to be perfect and get things absolutely right and spot on. Spiritually, my spiritual abstinence and recovery was an absolute surprise to me. It sort of pinged in after a few months, and I wasn't looking for that, but it came. And there's a little story about two fishes swimming in the water, and they meet an older fish. He says, hi chaps, how's the water today? And they sort of look at each other, and they swim on a bit further, and one of them says to the other, what's water? And I'm so immersed, I'm such a part of what my concept of my higher power is, that I find it very difficult to describe. And that ping moment of recognising I was a spiritual being was really important, and it's been such a support to me. I would never have guessed that I would get that, having ignored it for so many years. So my eating story, if you like, a bit of my background. I came to my first meeting on Friday the 24th of August 2012 at 2:30 p.m. and it was a big book meeting. And I couldn't understand why we were looking at Alcoholics Anonymous, written, apparently it seemed, by men, in the 1930s in America. And I was an overeater. However, every single person at that meeting said something that resonated with me about their eating. So I kept going back. I still go to that meeting, and I love and appreciate the big book, but I also do another local meeting which looks at the 12 and 12, and it was that that actually got me more understanding of my eating issues and my eating behaviours. I joined a year after I'd finished work, and it was a month before my 62nd birthday, so I'll leave you to work out the maths on that. I knew by then that it was my head needed fixing. I had had decades, literally 40 decades, of trying to fix myself in other ways with lots of well-known different programs. And I knew that it was my head, because I knew what I should be eating and what types of food and how much, etc. It was this that was my problem. My top known weight, and I like a few numbers, so I'm going to give you some numbers. My top measured weight that I'm aware of is 17 stone 3 pounds. That's 241 pounds, it's 109 kilograms. I don't know which of those will resonate most with you. And I just headed into the morbidly obese category. Now, I'm tall, I thought I was okay, but you know, there's a limit, isn't there? And that was in 2012. No, it wasn't, sorry. That was around autumn 2006. It was the year that my mum died, because that was when a life event triggered my eating with full effect. I was a bit less than that when I came into OA, but by 25th of April 2014, I'd hit the healthy BMI range. And again, not everybody wants to use that as a guide, but I do like the numbers. It helps me, because I can't tell by how my body feels and how my clothes fit what my weight is, whether it's going up or down. So I've been around 11 stone, 3 or 4, plus or minus 5 or 6 pounds ever since then. That's about 157, 162 pounds, something like that, 71 to 74 kilograms. And I reckon I've been a compulsive overeater all my life. I didn't know it. One of my earliest childhood memories is of trying to steal my younger sister's teething rusks and get them out of the packet quietly so my mum wouldn't say, "Patricia, stop stealing your sister's rusks." Even then I was trying to sneak food, and she's a couple of years younger than me. I'd have been about 4 or 5, something like that. And there's all sorts of different things I could regale you with about, you know, recognising with hindsight that I have this almost from the word go. I was called a beanpole as a teenager. Now, when I was really overweight, that would have been quite nice. But as a teenager, it really knocked me back, because it didn't make me feel feminine, it didn't make me feel pretty, it made me feel different. And as one of the three tallest girls in my school, I felt I stood out as odd. I did my first starving diet at the age of 18, when I gained a bit of weight. I went away to college and I was in charge of my food for the first time. And that starve for 3 days and then you can eat normally and you're all fixed. That sort of thinking carried on for the next 44 years, really, yo-yoing up and down, and always going up a bit higher. You'll have come across the phrase, possibly, "Oh, it's all about the food and it's nothing about the food." I recognised when I gave up smoking at the age of 29 that I had an addictive nature, because I got hooked on Victory V's. Sorry to mention a particular food. I mean, we're talking about the late 70s, early 80s, and they had a very different ingredient list in those days. And I was getting through, you know, several ounces of those a day. So I recognised that addictive nature. But what I did is I kept trying harder and harder different methods to try and control my eating. You know, it's that insanity of doing the same thing over and over again, trying harder, but expecting a different outcome. And I didn't know there was another way. I was depressed. I became more and more withdrawn. Compare and despair happened every single day. My self-esteem was hitting a lower and lower level. And I just blamed myself because I wasn't trying hard enough. I hadn't got it good enough yet. I have saved some of my writings from the age of 25, and it's quite upsetting, actually, when I read about myself. 5 minutes left. Oh, crikey, I better get down. Right, oh, step nine. I will concentrate on only one. I've got several, but here we go. My step four okay, I admitted I did this, that and the other, but I only did it because they did, blah, blah. It was a similar thing when I got to step nine, and it paralyses me, that sort of thing. I don't know where to go. My very first memory of discussing step nine in a car park before I even got there was, well, I'll never make amends to the father of my daughter. You can guess what happened, can't you? He was the first one I made amends to. He was a lovely bloke, very flawed. I'm very flawed. You know, we had different needs and we didn't manage to stay together. He was one of those people who, if you try to tackle him about, well, you know, can we talk about what went wrong with our relationship? He would immediately be like a puppy and go on his back and show his back and say, no, it's all my fault, it's all my fault, don't keep on at me. So what I had done before I made my amends was I'd written a letter because I didn't want to cause more harm, if you like, and make him feel really bad. I explained why I needed to do it. We talked. We didn't actually talk about my amends. We did talk about spirituality and whatever, funnily enough. It was good conversation. I gave him the letter. I don't know to this day if he read it. But after that, our friendship did deepen, and it was so helpful and so good. He died in autumn 2019, and I'm so thankful that I did that amend with him. It was just quite amazing. It made those years that we had since I'd made it up until his death so much easier for me and for my daughter. Once he died, I knew I needed to do a bit more. So I wrote another letter, much more detailed, and I shredded it, and I wanted to take it to a beach where we had enjoyed some good times together, because we did have good times. And as I let it go into the wind and blow into the seaweed and the sea and everything, I just cried my eyes out, and that was really cathartic, because I did love him in the best way I was able, and he did love me in the best way that he was able. You know, but we both wanted different things, and everybody's flawed, and I'm so glad that I can see his good points as well as his bad, and I can recognise my part in that. Another one arose from that, actually, at his wake. The young woman that he left me for came along. He was great like that. He kept in touch with all his exes. I think there are at least half a dozen there. Three ex-wives. You know, there is, he's a lovely bloke, but terribly flawed. 2 minutes left, okay. I had said something really nasty, really cruel, and really hurtful in her presence when she first got together with him, and it was deliberately meant to wound her. She was very much younger than me, and when I was doing my step nine, I realised I had to try and find her. She popped up. It's a God thing. I spoke to her, and my God, she remembered all those years. She remembered my words. I worked out it's about 27 years she carried that as well as me. And it was my fault that I had made her carry that for all those years. She was gracious enough to listen to me, and she was gracious enough to share her side with me without being apologetic or saying, no, it's all right. It wasn't. Nothing could write that. But I'm also so grateful that she was there and she was so gracious to let me do it. I need to learn to live with my past, and I need to do what I can to make amends to those people I've hurt. And there are living amends as well. You know, I've spoken about talking to people, I've spoken about writing a letter. My living amend is to my sister. She has learning difficulties and needs support, and I resent that. I still resent it. I didn't think I would. I wouldn't admit it for years and years and years, because that's not a nice attribute to have, is it? But I have to let her live her life the way she wants to, not the way I think is best for her. And that can be quite challenging and difficult. And it's one of the things I still have to work on every single day. I've got something down here about, oh yes, she is the only person now who can push my buttons and make me lose my temper. Nobody else can. She's the only one who can do that. You know, and she's been a part of my life for the longest of all people that I now have in my life. Time's up. Do your step nine. Don't delay. I delayed. I still have some to do. I have my daughter, and I have one particular ex-lover. He wasn't a partner, an ex-lover. I'm not sure what to do with either of those, but I need to get on to them, because carrying that baggage It's a spiritual weight. It's an emotional weight. I know how good I feel having lost the physical weight. I need to make that a threefold recovery or progress towards more recovery. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much, Pat.
I can't believe it's that long.